Thank you. First, to the people that showed up, thank you for coming. Is anybody stranded here that's still here? No? Just the West Coasters that are hanging in there. And made it through the parade craziness that's going on outside. So if you were on the other side of Market Street, if you got here at all, it was a minor miracle. I'm going to talk a little bit. First, to tell you, I have nothing to disclose. A little bit about what First Things First is. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this and get more to the program that we, one of the programs that we run, but just so you have a background and understanding of what we do. First Things First is a voter initiative. It is similar if you are familiar with North Carolina Smart Start or with California's First Five. We are the version of that in Arizona. Consistently, early childhood was underfunded or completely unfunded in the state of Arizona. And so there was a voter initiative that passed in November of 2006 that gave 80 cents per pack of tobacco to our program. It is in a secured fund that the state legislature cannot take. That has not stopped them from trying twice, but they have not been successful. So we're called the Arizona Early Childhood Development Health Board, but we actually, our board changed the name to First Things First. They thought it was a little catchier. So the way our revenue stream works, and it's relevant to how we operate our programming, the money doesn't come into a state entity, and then that money gets doled out that way. What happens with us is the money comes in, and 80 cents of every dollar that we take in through tobacco tax goes to local communities. We have 31 regional councils in different parts of the state. They determine how the money that they get gets spent in their community based on what their needs are, and they do a process to figure that out. About 10 cents of every dollar goes into, it's actually 9 cents, but it goes into a statewide initiatives that we operate from the state level. And then we are capped at a 10% administrative cost, which is really, really low if you look at what other people's administrative costs are, but we've capped ourselves. A lot of our regional folks are volunteers. That's how we're able to do that. So the things that we're charged with doing were all laid out in our initiative, and this is what they are: quality access and affordability of early childhood education. We have the quality improvement rating system for child care in the state. We have some inclusion programs. We provide some child care scholarships. Our state legislature in the state of Arizona took away our scholarshiping for child care for parents, so as part of the budget cuts. So right now we're the only entity that's providing scholarships for children for child care. We do have family support and service programs, primarily home visitation. We right now also are the single biggest funder of home visitation in the state of Arizona. Our Department of Economic Security, our welfare department, used to fund home visitation. That was also cut a couple of years ago. We have several family resource centers, and we do lots of community-based training. We do early literacy. We have, because of our tribal areas, have a lot of native language enrichment programs. We fund Reach Out and Read, and we do a lot of parent outreach and awareness. Then in the area of health, we have more initiatives than just what's listed here, but some of the things that we're working on across the state are oral health, developmental and sensory screening, care coordination, prenatal outreach, and mental and child care health consultation in child care services, and that's what I'm going to talk a little bit about today. So is anybody here familiar with what a child care health consultant does? Yes, I'm glad to see somebody. Oh, yes. It's an expert in health that's available to support child care providers to assure that children in their care are safe, healthy, and ready to succeed. The concept here is very similar to putting a school nurse in a school. We're putting a public health nurse in a child care program. They're not there full time. They're there to help the staff in the child. They don't work with individual children. They work with the staff in the child care programs to build their capacity to deal with health issues. So oftentimes you have someone, in particular in Arizona, we have folks who don't even have high school diplomas who are in charge of children all day, and they have zero health and safety training, and so they go in and can provide that to them. That book there is their Bible. It's called Caring for Our Children. It's a publication that's done by the APHA, the Academy of Pediatrics, and some other groups, and it outlines what should be happening in child care facilities for them to be safe and healthy. Again, it's a specially trained health professional. This program exists across the country in different states, and many states have different qualifications. We have chosen in Arizona that all of our health consultants will at least have an RN. We actually have two physicians who are child care health consultants in our state as well. And we have a registered dietitian too. They go through an NTI training course, which is there's a train the trainer. There's a national training institute, and they teach people how to train the CCHCs. Then they came back to the state of Arizona, and now we have our own training hubs there. Again, address health and safety, and the important thing to know is that they often don't work with individual children. They focus on program policies and procedures. So what we know is that if we can't get doctors to wash their hands after they see patients, and if you know the research will tell you that they don't, as much as we would like for them to, getting a room full of three-year-olds to do it is darn near impossible. So what does work is not just going in and showing people how to wash your hands, but it's putting things in place, like, do you have a policy for when you should wash your hands? Do you have signs around the sink that remind people that they should wash their hands? Do you have the equipment that you need? If you don't have running water, it makes it very difficult to meet that requirement, et cetera. So those are the kinds of things they work on. I'm not going to read all this to you. It's just a very busy slide that tells you that we've had this program in existence in the state of Arizona since 1986. We had two child care health consultants who basically carried the brunt of the program for almost that entire time until 2009. One is now our training coordinator for the state still. Her name's Kathy Ford. But in Pima County, which is the Tucson area, and Maricopa County, which is the Phoenix area, we had folks that were doing this program there, and they patchworked money together to get it done for years. It was a very small program. In 2009, First Things First decided to make this program a priority. We took it statewide and provided it with funding. So we put several million dollars into getting these folks all around the state. And the way our program works, I'm going to tell you how it worked and then tell you what we just did to change it, which has been a challenge. But it's part of our Quality First, Quality Improvement and Rating System. So you get a star rating on a hotel or a restaurant. The same concept applies to childcare. We built it into that system. As far as I know, we're the only state who actually has childcare health consultation, a built-in component to their QIRS. A nurse was available to all people who participated in that program. They each got a nursing assessment. We weren't using anything official, but it was the nurse would go in and look around and see what issues came to the fore, what kinds of things they would work on. They would develop a plan with a provider. They followed a care pathway, and nurses are typically familiar with what a care pathway is. You'd be shocked at what a difficult concept this is for education people to understand. A pathway? What do you mean a pathway? They think a pathway. And you know, a lot of explaining to them that what that really meant was this is a list of topics that we're going to address. The order may be different depending on the needs, but that's what it is. They collaborated with the quality improvement plan with the coaches. So for our QIRS, we have coaches who are going in and looking at overall quality issues. And they pulled the nurse in, and then they would work together on any health and safety related issues that they discovered. And they provided training on common health issues. So we did hand washing training, we did diapering training, we did a variety of things like that. And then they did policy review and improvement. Probably the thing I didn't put up here, but this is probably most valuable to child care facilities, was they also did a review of the immunization records. So often, I know, having been a public health nurse for many, many years, it's the immunization schedule is challenging at best for someone who does it every day. For, again, someone who doesn't have a high school diploma who's working in child care, it's impossible for them to figure out whether someone's where they need to be. And that was something that the nurses were doing for them for free, which was great. So we had a couple years of implementation, and we discovered some challenges that occurred based on the way we had set up the program. And like anything, we were not only a new state agency, but most of this programming was brand new, and everything sounds really good on paper when you start developing it until you actually implement it and you find out where your challenges are. So we had a system for child care providers who for a long time had no support at all. They were lucky to see a licensing person every 2 or 3 years in our state. That was it. And now all of a sudden we had coaches and assessors and nurses and mental health consultants and inclusion specialists and a million other people coming in on them all at the same time, and it was too much, way too much. They couldn't handle it, and they couldn't tell who was who. The components were all phased in at different times, so there was some confusion about who was in the lead and who was the primary person. It was, early on, a one-size-fits-all program, so We had a pathway. Everybody who participated got the nurse. They got all the components of the pathway, regardless of where they started. That created some provider reluctance. There were genuinely a lot of folks who said, we really don't need all this, but it was what we had, and so they got it whether they needed it or not. And not everybody was ready for change. Even though they signed up to be a part of a quality improvement process, it's a little overwhelming when they start to really understand what you're asking them to do. There was a lot of role confusion about what the coach did versus what the nurse did. We had technology issues that that made us all nuts. We had a lot of difficulty getting our system up and running. We had grantees that didn't fully expend their funds. And because I mentioned before, we've had a legislature that's tried to sweep our fund. We have a $400 million fund balance purposely. We draw down a little bit of that every year, and it was very attractive to our state legislature. But then we also had grantees that weren't expending their funds fully. And so it was a good reason for the legislature to say, you have all this money that you're not expending. So concerns about long-term sustainability. We want to keep growing our QIRS, but it's expensive to include all these components at that level and continue to expand the program. And it really wasn't holding true to the original model of service. So if you're familiar with child care health consultation, it's a process of somebody who's seeking help, finding somebody who's giving help. It's not really you're going to get the help whether you want the help or not. And so we didn't really feel like we were holding true to the model. So last year, we decided to make some pretty significant changes to the program. We took over as program administrator. Previously, we had different contracts with different entities to deliver it, but we decided we were going to become the program administrator. We developed a new model, and we spent several months trying to get everyone prepared. And I'm going to show you what that new model looks like and the changes. We hired a specified program manager, and I'm not that person. But we hired somebody who could manage the day-to-day operations of the program. And then we created a tiered model of service delivery. And that is in alignment with what a lot of the QIRS programs around the country are doing, Race to the Top, and all of those things are asking about tiered programming. And so we went ahead and aligned this with that. So what it looks like now is this. It's our lovely pyramid. Everyone in Quality First still has access to a nurse. We didn't take that component away. What we did was we said the level of intensity of services you'll get is different depending on your needs and desires. And so we have folks in that tier one, what we call universal, actually have availability of a nurse by phone all the time. We have a warm line. They can call and get questions answered of any sort. If they need referral to local resources and all of that, they can get that through that line. They can do some problem solving. If the problem is such that it can't be addressed by a telephone call, we can bump them up the line and they can get more intensive services. Tier two at risk is, I made a mistake of calling it a temporary level, and people thought that meant the level itself was going to go away, but it's temporary in the sense that if you land there, you don't stay there forever. That is really about, we've got an identified problem in a child care facility that needs intervention. Once that problem is dealt with, that program can either go on to intensive services or go back to telephone. So most often what we get there is we had a case of measles in a child care facility that got everybody into high gear. So we were in there several times, but then once that was taken care of, we backed out of that program. Then tier three is pretty much what they were getting all along. It's that intensive service. It's covering the whole thing. It's a year to 2 years worth of intervention with a nurse, and the nurse is out sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a month, depending upon the level of need of the program. So realizing we were completely changing the rules in the middle of the game, we decided we needed a communications plan. How are we going to let everybody know that we're doing this? We had participants already in the program. So we had to figure out how to let them know what was going on, let people who were getting ready to enter the program what was going on. So we sat down and really tried to think out what was the way we were going to communicate. So with our providers, our child care providers, we spent several months sending them information through our Quality First newsletter. We created other participant letters for programs that were in special circumstances or needed to be given additional information. We asked our nurses to do a transition meeting with each provider. So we have about 1,000 child care providers in our quality improvement system. every one of them had a meeting with the nurse to talk them through the changes to the program. Our other, what we call TA, technical assistance providers, are other folks that are in our QIRS system. We met with all of our coaches so we could talk them through the changes. We have something called a joint service collaboration group, which is all the folks that are involved in the system and includes surveyors and the licensing folks, everybody. And then again, they all got the Quality First newsletter with talking points as well. Then with our grantees, the thing I haven't mentioned before now is that in addition to changing the model, we also significantly reduced the money that we put into this program for several reasons. Much of it had to do with the fact that our grantees weren't expending their funds anyway, that mostly they were expending about 50% of what we were giving them, and that's what we dropped the money down to, which was not terribly popular with our grantees, as you might imagine. So it was really important to us to communicate with them what was going on and why. We did a series of supervisor-manager meetings. They actually helped to refine the model. So as we were figuring out how we wanted to make changes, they were involved in those decisions. We did two full-day conferences to discuss the changes with staff, and we did that several months before it actually took implementation so that everybody was on board. And then for us, because we have so much interaction with our regional council folks who they know the local providers, so it's not me in Phoenix who's necessarily going to run into the nurse who's doing this in a local community. It's the regional council people. They have monthly regional in-services. We did updates for them at those. We sent them the Quality First newsletters. We did a traveling roadshow where we basically went around to almost all of our regions to meet with our councils and let them know what was happening. We changed caseloads in the program. Previously, they had been carrying about 30 programs apiece. And we took that down to no more than 25. And then we took into account some extra acuity things. As you all know, we actually have a region. It's Coconino County in Arizona. We have a child care program that's in the middle of the Grand Canyon. You can get there by helicopter or donkey. We sort of figured that would count as extra acuity in dealing with that program because it's very difficult to get to. For unique circumstances, we wanted to give them some flexibility in how they did their caseloads. And we also formalized our health and safety assessment. So instead of just a nursing assessment done by the individual, we began implementing the California Health and Safety Checklist. It's in the process of being revised right now, and in fact, we were selected as a test state. They're going to be doing some testing on the new changes to the model. But everyone's been trained in using it, and we've just started using that on every program that we go into now. And we also developed something called Health Champion Training, which is great. We can't stay in a child care program forever because we don't have the capacity. The idea here is to select someone who works in a child care program and put them through a modified version of the CCHC training so that when the nurse is gone, that's the person that will be there to, for lack of a better word, bug everybody to wash their hands or to make sure that people are following the policies that are outlined or to, you know, do the things that need to get done. We did a pilot of it. We had a couple of students come to that. We redid it, and now we're getting ready to do another session of it. We are hoping to have 4 series of classes held this fiscal year. So that, we also stole that from the state of California. I have no shame about admitting that. So what went well in that transition? Well, despite the funding reductions, which amounted to almost 50% of the funding, because we started early, attrition allowed us to, we didn't actually have to let anyone go. All of our grantees were able to move people into other positions, or some folks found other jobs because they had plenty of lead-in, which was one of my biggest fears in making this change. We didn't want to cut people loose. We didn't have to do that. The providers that we serve have now been offered choices, which is great. So it's not a one-size-fits-all for them now, and they're very happy to be able to say, I really only want telephone services, and maybe a year from now when things have settled down, I might want the more intensive service level, and they can do that. It's closer to the original model of the program. The grantees this time around actually had input into how it rolled out, so they were a part of the process of deciding how it would look. And now we have dedicated staffing for the program. It was a part of my job previously, but this is only one very small piece of what I do. So the challenges and things that we learned, and I think things that extrapolate to anybody who's considering any kind of model change to a program. Communication we thought we had down. but it can always be improved. We discovered that we did all of this pushing out of information to all the supervisors and grantees, and we really should have been directly communicating with the frontline service staff. So we would share information in a rural county where there may only be 3 staff people, but if that person didn't tell the person who did the frontline service work, they didn't hear it. So not everything got as far as we wanted it to go. So that I would definitely do that differently. You need buy-in from all staff. There were some folks who were not happy about the model change. They made it clear they were not happy about the model change, and they actively, in some cases, tried to undermine the process of changing it. So that is something that the best way to deal with that is to recognize it and confront it head on. People have different mental models. When we talked about a warm line, we had some folks who had one vision of how that might look, and it didn't turn out to look that way, and so it caused a lot of anxiety. So the recommendation I would have is that everybody get public, ask the question, what is your mental model of what this will look like, so that we can see that everybody's is slightly different, so that people are prepared for it not looking exactly the way they think it will look. Initial decisions can be the gift that keeps on giving. Probably everybody who's ever started anything in their life knows that, is when you make one decision and 15 years later it comes back to haunt you. You know, it's that one little thing that never goes away. We have some of those that still appear here and there. And basically, the primary is that change is just difficult for people. It's very anxiety-provoking, and so this was no different than that. So next up for us, quickly, is to finalize the last components. There's still some pieces we're trying to fix and get in order. We're looking at developing a PRN pool so that we have people to cover when someone goes on maternity leave and some other things like that. California Health and Safety Checklist is something new, and we're looking at how frequently we'll be doing that, among other things. And we're making some decisions on our documentation system, which is a little cumbersome right now, and hopefully we're trying to correct that. Ongoing support for direct line staff, so we're trying to help them work through the transition. Data review. So if we had started the new implementation sooner, I would have brought is, what difference did that make in what our eventual ratings for child care are? Because what we suspect is that programs that choose to have this process will move further on the rating scale than programs we were forcing to. By next year, we'll know that. So stay tuned. That is my daughter, and I'm missing Halloween. But my contact information is on here, and then if you have really questions about more specific to the program piece of this, Ann Caskell is our new program manager, and her contact information is here available as well.
Now we're going to have one question, and then so that we make sure that everybody gets a question for that or has that chance, because sometimes people forget as they get farther into the program. So are there any questions now?
Yeah.
Our system allows us to, in fact, our system requires us to measure the amount of time that we're in a program. So the data is fairly new. We pulled some of it when we redid the model to find out how much time people were spending in programs, but we absolutely do look at our ratings, our quality ratings for childcare are just being made public this year. So we haven't really been able to do much comparing to the rating yet, but starting this year, we should be able to start looking at things like, did how much time a nurse was in the program impact the overall quality rating? Yes, that's definitely on our radar. Where are you from?
I'm from Pennsylvania.
Oh, great. Very good. We looked at your model, too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over, and I'll be here if anybody else has questions.